Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. Hello, everybody. Hello, listeners. It's David here, and I'm by myself this time, in so much as Ange is not with me. But that doesn't mean I'm not alone, because I'm with the most beautiful Amanda Galifi, who runs Sky Gem Designs, and she is thousands of miles away from me. And interestingly, she's been thousands of miles away from me, but in different directions over the last few months, because she's based on the eastern side of Canada. Hello, Amanda.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm so excited.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for agreeing to come on. And just to let the listeners know, we have known one another through Instagram for quite a few years, I think.
I'd say about 3 years now.
Yeah, probably something like that, since I started doing jewellery anyway. And we were hoping to meet up in Western Canada while we are over there. But, you know, the world got in the way and it didn't happen. But we are going to do it when we come back, aren't we?
Absolutely. It will happen.
Brilliant. So the first thing I would like to ask you, and I know the listeners would be fascinated to know about, especially as you're in a different country to most of our listeners, though we do have listeners in Canada as well, what's your studio space like and what do you love about it?
Well, my studio space actually just got finished. It's in our basement. We just finished renovating it. And it's a dedicated space. We have ventilation in there. It's basically my she shed, as my hubby calls it. And I love it. I have a window with natural light, which is something I love because I love being outside. And I can spread out and lay all of my stuff out as I need to and not feel crowded. A few months in before this, we had the studio. It was in the dining room during the renovation. And before that, when the basement was unfinished, it was a dark little space. But now it's a brilliantly beautiful, very cozy space. Love it.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So what are you working on at the moment?
Nothing. Actually, I'm taking a break because I just had my first spring show, first show of the season. And I was quite busy making a bunch of pieces up to that point. I hope to get back to the bench this week, if not next. I got some beautiful ringstones and some lapis lazuli, and I've been itching to make some new pieces with those.
Excellent. So when you are making, what's your greatest fear when you're making jewelry?
My greatest fear would probably be one, setting the bench on fire. I don't know why that. But always have a fire extinguisher at the ready for sure. But my biggest fear in terms of jewelry creating is that it doesn't turn out how I had it in my head or how I had it drawn out.
Is that something that's really important to you?
It is, but I'm learning to let go of, if it's not exactly how I had it in my head, it obviously wasn't meant to be exactly how it was. So whether the design changed partway through, or the design completely didn't work, or whether I need to learn a new skill or hone a skill I've already learned to get to where I want it to be. The biggest fear is it doesn't turn out, but one of the greatest rewards is once you let go of that and you make a piece and you go, I actually like that better than the original.
Yeah, I totally get that. I was making a pendant last week and it was only when I was setting the three gems that I suddenly realized I'd set two of them upside down from the way I had intended.
Oh no, but it's beautiful.
Well, thank you. But it wasn't I had intended, but I was more than happy with how it came out. But so I understand where you're coming from on that one, totally. So on the other side of the coin then, what, when you're making your jewelry, brings you the most joy? Is there a certain time within it, a certain part of the process that really excites you?
Seeing it come out of the tumbler, because it's jewelry, as you know, the making process is very dirty. It can be very messy. And again, it's you think you know what it's going to look like. But then when you see out of the tumbler, it's all shiny. I mean, what jeweler doesn't love shiny pieces? And it's the satisfaction of knowing I made that. That I'm happy that I made that. And because I'm very new to silversmithing, I really try and push myself with my skills and learning new techniques, ancient techniques. And when I see them come together and they're finished, it's very satisfying to know that all the hard work that I've done and the frustrating, the melting, the hammering, when it comes together, it's very satisfying to see that end result.
I totally understand. Is there a specific technique that you really enjoy doing the most?
I actually really love granulation. It's, as you know, it's an ancient technique that's 5,000 years old, and it's still considered one of the hardest techniques to do because it's all time to temperature ratio. You heat it too much and you melt the whole thing. So when you heat it just enough and the little spheres don't fly off the bench and they stick where you want them to go, and you see this piece and you're like, yes, I nailed it. And each piece is different. You never have two pieces that are the same. You could have three spheres and two earrings, but the spheres aren't exactly the same, and they're not all set exactly the same. And I love that. It really brings a uniqueness to handmade jewelry.
Totally agree. A lot of people are interested in granulation, and I know a lot of people are quite fearful of trying it. Are there any tips you would give someone who is just trying granulation as to, what might be one or two things they really should concentrate on before they actually get any heat near it?
Take a really big deep breath and take your time. I'm not a patient person by nature. I can hear hubby laughing behind me. And so take your time, really think about what you're going to do. And something totally random is make sure you have a piece of carpet or something where it's going to catch if you get too close and you haven't heated everything properly, the ball goes flying off the bench because they're so tall. This way, if they catch onto a piece of carpet, then you're not going to lose everything all over the room, which I've had happen.
I know that one. I know that somewhere on the floor of my studio there is a garnet and a tanzanite, but you think I can find them? I can't.
Yep, been there, done that. Yep, I get it.
So you say you've only been making jewelry for a few years. What got you into making jewelry?
Well, I've always been fascinated with how jewelry is made. Even as a kid, I've always been a creative soul. And I started watching a couple of little videos that actually a friend of mine who is a West Coast jeweler told me about for the Jewelers Academy, which I know you are a student as well. And it really showed me that, wow, this is a pretty neat thing. It's not just this magical thing that, oh, you go to a jewelry store, it's there. How did it come to be? That it really pushed me to want to learn it. So I joined the Jewelers Academy in January of 2019, did a little bit with their silver clay stuff. Because again, it's a cost thing. As you know, things are ridiculously expensive, tools, materials. And so I started with silver clay, did a little bit of that. And then I was laid off in 2020, like two-thirds of the world, I'm sure, as we know what happened. And we discussed it, and my husband said, you've always wanted to learn proper silversmithing, so do it. So I expanded my membership with the Jewelers Academy, and as you know, it's in England, and I'm in Canada, and it's all online. So I had no formal instruction in person. I just had watched the videos, I took part in some online master classes, and I really dove into it. It actually was a good gift of sanity through the pandemic it really gave me great purpose and focus. And I've just expanded from there.
Well, you certainly have. I mean, you've made a fantastic business out of it. When I see all the work you produce, you see, it looks like you're working 24/7 by the amount of work you get out as well. I'm a lot slower when I'm making than I think you are. So who are, or what other jewelers or designers or architects or artists kind of inspire you when you're being creative?
Well, you're a huge inspiration. You're not only your pieces. Now, we have very different jewelry styles, but I love the architecture element to your work. I love how you create because you want to create. It's they're big, they're bold designs, and you take chances with it. You take risks with it. And that has been a big inspiration to make what I want to make, not because something is mainstream. Do what sets your soul on fire. And I have a couple of jeweler friends in Canada. One just moved to Victoria. She does a lot of sea glass stuff. And she takes risks with her pieces as well. And another gal who's in Vancouver is originally from Sweden. She uses metal clay. And her work is brilliant. I absolutely love it. Silver Metal Art is the gal in Vancouver, Anna. And Moss Rock Metals, Jenny is in, she's now in Oregon, but she lived in Victoria. It's a lot of different people from a lot of different parts of the world for different reasons. Either it's their story, how they started it, the materials that they use, the design that they use. Architecture is a big influence. I love the Art Deco era. That's one of my most favorite eras. And I've recently started to read more about ancient techniques, the granulation, fusing silver dust, even textures. How do I incorporate different textures? I saw someone do a type of hammering with a riveting hammer, which is different than using the edge, the flat edge of a ball peen hammer. So even things like that fascinate me and inspire me to do what I do.
Brilliant. And you do amazing work. And thank you for the compliment yourself.
Yes.
You talked about alternative materials quickly there. Are there alternative materials that you have played with or would like to play with in jewelry making?
Well, using the silver dust is, even though it's silver, it's still a very fine, messy, delicate process. And which again, it can go beautifully or it can be melted and you're left with a hot mess. I would love the opportunity to use gold and to do kombu, and that I find is intimidating. There is actually a local artist to me, Air Earth Design, Heidi. She uses that in her work, and it's absolutely incredible. It's that little spark gold that's in there. It just, as with your work, it just adds a different element to the piece, and I'm always wanting to learn more and more and more, and I'd love to do wax casting. I see your work. There's a course in Dublin that I really would like to do. It's just stuff that fascinates me. It's just always wanting to push yourself, just to try it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, okay, well, we'll try something else.
Yeah, exactly. I always say when things go wrong, they're what I call an AFGO, which is another beep growth opportunity. And that's where, you know, and that's basically what we have. Just by trying new things out, things, you know, we learn something, and we either learn how not to do it, or we learn, you know, that we may not actually want to do it, which I think in some ways is as interesting, in that I tried precious metal clay, I enjoyed the experience, but I realized it wasn't really me. It was something that, you know, I actually particularly got a huge amount of enjoyment from, compared to either forging sheet and wire metal or working with the wax. But interestingly, also, like you, kombu is something that I want to try. For me, the thing that kombu doesn't allow me, as I understand it, is be as precise as I want to be when I'm actually plating. With the plating, I can be exactly where I want to be with the gold. Kombu, there is less control. And in some ways, I recognize that losing control is a good thing, but I haven't come up with a design yet that I feel would allow me to give up that control and try kombu.
Very much so. I agree with that.
We now know what you enjoy doing. Well, you're doing a jewelry, and we know what you fear. Do you talking about, I mean, one of the things I fear is always, and get equal enjoyment from, is commissions. Have you started taking commissions yet?
Have done commissions sporadically. Over the last few months, I haven't, just because I had a major renovation in the home. I haven't had the space to do, or the ability to focus on a commission. To be honest, I'm not a huge fan of them, in that the fear is getting exactly what the client wants. A lot of it comes down to communication, whether it's you draw something or you explain the technical side of it and they don't understand it, or whether it's the cost factor can be a thing, because as you know, commissions are, they're expensive. It's specific stones, specific design. It's dedicating a specific time frame to do it. Everybody wants to have their piece loved and admired, and especially when you make one of a kind for a specific person, that not only the client loves it, but if it's a gift, the recipient of the gift loves it. And it's stressful, and I find that can take the creativity energy out of it, because I get so focused on this has to work, it has to be perfect, it has to be exactly what they want, and that can be very stressful. And when you're under a lot of stress and you're trying to get it done, I find more mistakes can happen. It's a whole pressure thing for me. So I do commissions, but it's not my favorite thing to do.
I totally understand where you're going from. One of the things that was most frustrating when I was doing all the glitters, or that we all had, was that when we were doing the bespoke work there, we were given a brief, but we weren't able to actually interact with the client. So we only had the brief to work from. And I know when I'm doing a commission, I see the client two or three times throughout the commission process. If I have questions and I think I need to actually show them this thing so that they have a real understanding. And if it's not, and if your client's not local, you can't do that. You can only, you know, send them an image and talk to them on the phone or talk to them via Zoom. So I'm totally with you on that. And that commissions, as much as I enjoy being asked to make them, are always definitely the more stressful, because it's not just me that I'm trying to please.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
So when you're in the workshop, to just to get keep the stress less, when you're in the workshop and you want to keep the stress levels down, do you listen to music? Do you listen to podcasts? Do you sing? How do you get in this?
I listen to music. So it's funny, when we were at the show yesterday, I was explaining the technique of granulation to a customer, and my husband chimed in and said, I can always tell when things are going well at the bench, because I have either classical or I love 90s music. It's my era.
Uh-huh.
And he can tell things are going well. When things don't go well, a little bit of Rage Against the Machine will come on, and then I switch it, and you'll hear a lot of hammering, because I'll leave it.
Right.
And I'll do something where I can get out a bit of aggression. So I love listening to music when I work. Sometimes I'll have a movie that I love playing in the background. I don't listen to podcasts while I'm at the bench, because podcasts, I really want to listen if I'm going to learn something from it. Because when I'm at the bench, I really want to focus as much as I can without a lot of distraction. So what's in the background is extraneous stuff that, if I hear it, great. If I don't, it's not a big deal. But a podcast, I dedicate time to listen to it uninterrupted.
Okay, great. So you have taken part in some jury, or I should say your jury has taken part in a couple of juried shows, hasn't it? Where you've been invited to take part. And that is exciting in itself. Would you like to tell the listeners about those and how you managed to achieve that?
Sure. So I'm not sure how it is in the UK, but in North America and in Canada, they have a lot of juried shows. So you have to submit a bio of yourself. You have to submit photos of your work. And sometimes it's 5 to 10 images, which you have to go through all of your work and pick what you feel is the best for that market that they have, that show. And you have to explain your history, your education, and your making process. And that it goes into their system, and then the jury looks at it. And some shows are extremely difficult to get into. And I find that juried shows, they're very particular, because they don't want to have one category that's completely saturated with the same type of stuff. So jewelry is one of the most highly sought after categories and one of the most applied to categories. So to have your work stand apart and to be chosen to be in those shows is one, it's a huge compliment to the work that I do.
I know.
And it gives me the opportunity to meet all new people every time. It's a different one. And you get to, when you're in a show, you get to explain your processes, your inspirations. You get to make personal connections. It's not just my stuff is in a shop, which is, I'm very fortunate to be in some boutiques in Canada and in France. And that's a great opportunity. You know, some people can really resonate with your pieces and they love it more because they've met you. So yeah, to be in a show is, it's very important to me.
So do you think there is something particularly unique about you and what you put into your jewelry that has enabled you to be selected and, you know, get into these shows and exhibitions?
I think part of it is because I haven't been a silversmith for long. I'd say less than 3 years, full on silversmithing. It's part of it. I use techniques, the ancient techniques, as we discussed, that not a lot of people in North America, well, I'll say in Canada, use. So the granulation, fused silver. I love putting texture into the material, whether it's into the silver clay or into sterling silver. And the stones that I try to pick are different. I like unique stones. So whether I get a set of dendritic agate, each stone, it has a different character to it. Each story is within its own stone. And I think that's part of what sets it apart from others. And I don't like doing mainstream stuff. That's never been me. I don't want to be, like, as much as I love Tiffany and company, I don't want to have the same ring or the same pendant as everybody else does.
No, totally agree. So for somebody who wanted to start up in jewelry, what would be the one tip you'd give them starting out? What might be their focus so that they can kind of move into making jewelry?
Watch a lot of videos beforehand to make sure that it's something that you truly want. Whether you want to do it as a hobby or you want to do it as a business, watch the videos, because it's not as easy as people think it is. And it is an investment. It does cost a fair amount to get into it. And be sure you have a dedicated space in your home that you can do it. You can do jewelry in a lot. Like I said, my studio is in our home and I'm grateful we have the space. But before, I was using the dining room table and a little school desk in the basement eventually. And now I have a proper bench. But make sure you do research first. Before you invest any money, sign up to watch a couple of jewelry classes online and see if it's something that resonates with you, because it's not instant gratification.
No.
It's not, ooh, look, that's shiny. No, oh, that's messy. Oh, that's on fire. Oh, that's really going to take a while to finish. And there's a lot of things to consider before you get to the look, it's shiny situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say to people, it takes more time to file and polish the piece of jewelry than it does do anything else.
Absolutely.
So what are your plans for the next 2 to 5 years? What are you going to do with Sky Gems?
We'd love to have this as my full-time gig.
I know.
Work on this solely. There are a couple of big shows in Canada that I would really love to be in. I will let you know later if that happens.
Good.
Just to grow the business. Our focus last year and this year are exposure and me honing my signature style and my craft. And so far, by having those focuses, it's expanded the business. And that's what we want to enjoy life as well. We're both planning on retiring from our current full-time gig, by November of 2025, if not sooner. So I want it to be bigger than what it is, but still where I will not give up creative control, because it's still my business. I make all of it. That's one, actually, that's a piece of advice a friend gave me. Don't get to a situation where you lose creative control.
Yes.
Because then you lose yourself and you lose why you're doing it in the first place. So it's exposure, it's honing the craft and my signature skill. And when we retire from our other gigs in the couple of years, we'll see where we go from there.
Fantastic. One of the things a lot of people find difficult, especially creatives, whether it's jewelry or any other, is marketing, exposure. And how have you dealt with that? You said there's something you've been concentrating on, you know, for the last while. What have you feel that's been really successful for you?
My main platform is Instagram media. I have a Facebook page as well. However, Instagram is my big thing. It can be quite rewarding. I've had shops reach out to me from seeing my photos on Instagram. They've asked me to, you know, if I wanted to be in their shop or I wanted to participate in this event. Going to the shows is another big thing. Before the pandemic, I wasn't really keen on doing that. And I wasn't in a financial position to be able to do that. And then during the pandemic, I did a lot of online shows. They did in here in Canada, we did a lot of online markets instead. Okay. And that got the exposure. But now being in person, I go to different towns within a couple of hours radius from home. So it's getting out and being in front of people is the biggest. It's also really focusing on your clients, like who you want, what your clientele is, like what your ideal customer is. And there are some places that you know that's not where they're going to be. So you have to go to where those people are. And then, you know, you ask your friends and family, can you shout out that I'm at this show? Can you share some of my pieces? Can I get testimonials from people who have it and who bought my stuff? And that's helped as well. I did the marketing course through the boot camp with the Jewelers Academy. That helps a lot. Marketing it's a challenge. And it honestly, it can be exhausting.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I love being at the bench creating stuff. As I bet you 95% of jewels will tell you that's where they want to be. Doing all of the marketing, it's not really where they want to be, but you have to. It's your brand. It's your business. And, you know, if you're passionate about it, then you'll shout it from the rooftops, which some days we feel like we do. So
my last but one question is a daft question, but it's one I always ask, which is, if you were a fruit, what fruit would you be?
I was a fruit. I would probably say a raspberry because no two are ever the same. There's only one. So there's only one of me. There's different sides to it. I have different sides. You can be, some days you can be very sweet and some days you can have life make you feel like you just want to be sour, which raspberries can be. Oh, that is an unusual question, but I'll talk.
Interestingly. What suddenly came to me as you were saying that is, of course, a raspberry looks like it's been made through granulation.
Oh, I didn't see it. There you go. Yes. Aha. Aha, there you go. So that's my answer.
Brilliant. So the last question is, how can listeners find you? Where can they find you online? Where can they find your work?
On social media, I am on Instagram and Facebook at Skygem Designs. And I have a website. It's www.skygemdesigns.ca. These are in Canada. And those are my main social platforms and ways you can reach out.
Okay. And so for the Canadians that are near you, where's your next place that you're going to be showing and selling your work?
So the next show that I'm at, I'm very excited. It'll be my first time with them, is at the Creative Hub in a place called the Small Arms Inspection Building in Port Credit, Mississauga, Ontario. And that's on June 25th, July 9th, and August 6th.
Fantastic. I wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on, Amanda. It's been fascinating talking to you. And I know everybody else will have enjoyed it as well. And I look forward to seeing your work online, as ever I do. Take care.
Thank you so much for having me, David. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us in another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track of Topi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.